Dig your cleats in.
Line drive sailing away from Mullins.
Oh!
An impossible catch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the Hot Corner with Patrick Harris and Joe Fisher.
What did I do wrong? What did I see wrong?
Covering all things baseball, the big leagues, and the MLB to Portland.
And there's another rocket. Mike Trout has tied it up with an absolute bomb to the top of the facade in left center field. Talk about Stanton territory. Trout hammers it, and it's 4-4, 473 feet.
Now, here are your hosts, Patrick Harris and Joe Fisher on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome into the Hot Corner for it must be a Tuesday, but baby, it's always a Tuesday around here. Patrick Harris with you. Joe Fisher out today as he's out on some special sales retreat that somehow we, at the last minute, were able to afford. So it's just me and my fantastic producer who's going to sit in the two-chair double duty today. That's Jordan Schultze over there.
What's up, brother? Let's not go?
Let's not go. Yeah, who knows, buddy? But hey, this is we said it last week. This is the best time to be a host, producer, co-host, whatever you want to call us for the Hot Corner, because baby, this S just writes itself.
I was just about to come in and lament that, you know, we're here for really awesome baseball, for really close games, like just edge of your seat kind of action, and we weren't getting that until literally you and I sat down in our chairs. Pretty freaking awesome.
I just looked up at the TV and Teoscar went deep, and I, to pull the curtain back for you out there listening, all five of you, I said to my amigo over there, Schultze, Teoscar just hit a grand slam, and he was like, whoa, yes. It's always fun to catch a producer that's like doing producer things. Then it's like, oh, you didn't get the chance to watch the TV, did you?
No, I missed the news that I'm supposed to be reporting.
Yeah, that's all right. I got you back, though. I got you back.
And my response, by the way, after the amazed look on my face was, oh, but he strikes out too much, right?
And I said, too expensive.
$22 million for that? No, I'd take it every day.
Just remember, your numbers look a lot better when you've got Mookie, Freddie, and Shohei in front of you and not JP, Julio, and Ty France.
Protection helps, but Cal and Julio, I feel like, would be enough for Teo. But we're getting into sports too early.
Too much sports. I do love that in this time of the year, all of a sudden, all the national pundits are all baseball experts. Have you noticed this?
Seriously, yeah.
That's like me getting on this show and talking to you about, you know, the greatest sport ever to exist. You know, we like to laugh and joke on this show about the NBA, but like when I hear national pundits talk about baseball that never talk about baseball, I'm always like, you're so cute.
Well, I think they just...
It's so cute.
Baseball, it's like the slowest game, even though there is a lot going on, you know, like between the lines and between the ears. But for some reason, because it moves so slowly, every sports pundit out there thinks like, oh, yeah, I could get to analyze that. I know what I'm talking about. Like, you really don't.
And the national pundits are all like, dude, it's Dodgers Yankees. And it's like, is it? Like, anybody that talks baseball is like, those teams got a lot of problems.
Royals Padres, maybe?
Royals Padres sounds more believable.
Yeah. Nobody cares. No, Kansas City v. San Diego.
But, you know, I'll give some props to the primetime boys that were in here. They're big baseball guys. They might not talk a lot of baseball on their show, but they are both big baseball guys.
Huge.
Especially Rop and his Royals. And Sook's a big baseball guy. He's a baseball family. So I always listen to what they say, but I mean, they even said it in passing at the end, like this Dodger team is not very good, and we'll get to them a little bit later on as we start to kind of break down all the matchups that are going on. But that's where I always get to laugh at the national media. They're like Yankees, Dodgers. And it's like, have you seen these teams?
It's literally the same as like, oh, Lakers, Knicks. Like they want that legacy matchup, that blue chip, you know, Celtics, Lakers, 70s, 80s final.
Hey, LeBron's good, but it's me and Schultze playing with him. You know, like you're not going to win.
Pretty freaking much. And his kid.
You're not going to win. You know, you're just not going to win. So I've been having a lot of fun just kind of, you know, these are the days when maybe I should preface it this way. These are the days that us as baseball fans get to revel in the fact that we're baseball fans.
Yeah.
So somebody looks at this game tonight, 6-1. Man, the Padres, the Dodgers are really screwing up this one. And it's like, well, no. The Padres might be the better team.
I mean,
you know, we get to laugh. Possible. We get to enjoy it because we actually see how it goes down. You know, it's not like that guy at your Super Bowl party that's like, you know what, dude? I think the Rams got a really good chance of beating this Patriots team. I think Tom Brady is washed. And you're like, dude, you don't watch football, do you?
Like, did you just like read one article before you got here?
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what, and I feel like that's baseball. So I get to sit here and laugh and revel in the idea that I win.
Well, and the Padres.
This little peon in Portland, Oregon, that's done this stupid baseball show for almost a decade. I win.
Well, in particular, the Padres, I think, owning the Dodgers a little bit in the last day and a half or two with Manny Machado and that whole controversy with him throwing the ball that literally looks like he's throwing, like, ground ball practice to a little leaguer. But you know, Dave Roberts says that that's offensive.
Hold the phone here.
A week ago, I was so for Dave Roberts. I was, like, ready to run through a wall for that dude because he literally does make players feel like superstars. Great podcast. It's like Casey Sadler, former MLB pitcher and Mariner that he does with his wife. But in that one episode, they were talking about right after the Mariners fired Scott Servais, like, you know, Servais talking about maybe why he got fired, not necessarily connecting very well with players throughout his tenure with the Mariners, but Dave Roberts
tends to be more of a stoic guy.
Exactly.
Roberts is very much a player's coach.
And Roberts makes the 26th man, this was the quote that stuck out to me, makes the 26th man on the roster feel like an effing champion. And there's just some guys that have that ability, and those are the better managers, at least what Sadler and his wife were saying.
Sure,
and those are the guys that
Tito was like that. We'll talk about Tito in the second hour. Tito was like that.
Huge get. And yeah, those are just the guys that people would rather play for. So I was ready to run through a wall for him a week ago, but now after hearing his, like, all calling out Manny Machado, like, oh, you're a bitch.
You're going to make number 26 feel good? Cool. Tommy Edman is still a below-average center fielder in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, they're still a hitter short. The Dodgers lineup is still one batter short. It's unbelievable.
We paid $1 billion, and we can't hit the baseball.
Or pitch. Got to go grab Jack Flaherty mid-season.
Oakley.
We got 7 starters on the DL or IL.
Oakley Dukley. Well, there's a great baseball show lined up for you. I'm sad Joe's not here because I know we would love to punish him for his O's and how they once again quietly, gracefully exited the playoffs. I wish I would have heard that fart, you know? You know, they're like a fart in the wind, but it's like one of those where I kind of wish it was like that really big, like...
Yeah, but Brandon Hyde will be back.
You know, like one of these, like a...
Like really audible.
Instead, it was just like a...
Man up and vanish like a fart in the wind, to quote Shawshank Redemption.
Exactly. I actually am going to go out on a limb and tell you that there is no sales retreat that Joe Fisher called in his one black ball of the year and said, hey, we're all gone on Tuesday because I don't want to face it.
Is he sitting?
I don't want to have to face what I have done.
Sitting with his Orioles pillow and his Jackson Holiday jersey, just like crying.
Yeah, I feel like he's like Antonio Pierce or Pete Carroll, where they have been put on notice by the NCAA, and they have to show cause before they can go back. And they're like, "Yeah, we're not going back.
Ah, peace out.
Yeah, we don't care. We're not going back." That's Joe Fisher, ladies and gentlemen. That's
Step
Joe
up.
Fisher.
Man up.
Dodging all of his things.
I have to live as a Seattle Mariners fan every day.
And Joe just gets to...
hide away.
Well, there's a lot to get to tonight. We'll get into this Dodgers-Padres series, which sometimes feels like a World Series matchup, and that's why we love playoff baseball. The American League is all over the place, just kind of like I thought it would be. When you have a chance to beat a team and you got out of having to deal with their starter and you blow it, that's a big problem. We'll get to that in the 8 o'clock hour. And also, the Yanks are put on notice, and we've put them on notice for weeks and months about this team and its construction, and it's rearing its ugly head right now. So we'll get to that in the second hour, along with hiring news that I'm excited and kind of mad about.
Mad.
Yeah. We'll get to that at the 8:30. We're going to skip fair or foul because we got just too much to get into. And so because of that, let's dive into straight up and forth. The game that happened earlier today, Jason Sukanik, who sits in the chair to the left of me, I just said goodbye to him. Let's talk about them Mets, okay? This Mets team looks like a team of destiny, and quite frankly, I don't know why. We'll do that next. The Hot Corner, 1080 The Fan. 716 here, Portland Sports Leader. Don't you forget it. We are live from the shadows of the historic Fremont Bridge. The Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. Your dollar goes further with Vancouver Ford than you should write before, during, after the sale. I love coming in with this Sugar Diaz music because we're actually going to talk about the Mets. And, you know, you call me 6 months ago and ask me if I'm going to be talking about the Mets in October. And the answer is, boy, oh, baby, the answer is absolutely not. I mean, do we need a waste segment and talk about how much money they're going to spend next year on a bunch of guys that aren't very good and still not be very good? Boy, am I wrong.
Weren't they 11 games under 500 at one point this season?
This team looks so for dead.
Yeah. Like, Francisco Lindor to start the year, he's been amazing, but he was hitting, like, .190 for April.
And what's hilarious is I love that you mentioned Frankie, because I think Frankie is the catapult. Yep. I know the look is polar bear. You know, that's kind of the idea, is that Pete Alonso is the big dude. But when Frankie got traded from Cleveland to New York and signed that massive deal, honestly, he's been a disappointment. He had a pretty good season last year, like, especially to the end of the year. Then this year, he blew the doors off. You're like, okay, thank God. I don't want to pay a guy $32 million to bat 190. And Frankie has been absolutely fantastic. But, you know, I kind of alluded to this, and we'll get to it when we get to the Dodgers and the Yankees. This team, to me, is just, when I see them, they are not good. This Mets team is not good, okay? It's Frankie Lindor. Pete Alonso's got a big bop, but isn't always consistent. You know, struggled down the stretch. Brandon Nimmo, I think, is a good player, but probably overpaid. And this pitching staff is pretty meh, and the bullpen is pretty bad. Yet here we are. There's something about this team, this grimace team, this everyone thinks we suck attitude. You know, is Carlos Mendoza a good manager? I have no idea. Is Luis Severino a good starter? I have no idea. Is Pete Alonso worth the $30 million he's going to try to get in the offseason? I don't think so. I saw this funny stat, though. Pete Alonso, of his 40-ish, whatever he finished with, number of home runs on the season, only two were opposite field. He's got two home runs in the postseason right now, and both are opposite field. And one was the best moment of the playoffs so far, right? Is Pete Alonso hitting that baseball against the Brewers the best moment in the postseason so far?
Close. I mean, I don't know. Tatis's home run in the wild card round was pretty good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like that. Like there's that. There's. I mean, I don't know if the Dodgers win tonight. I think Teoscar's grand slam could end up being a pretty huge one.
Yeah, it is a big one, especially because you're down. But there's something about this Mets team. And look, I have the Phillies as the best team in the National League. I think they're the best 1-9 batting lineup. I think they have the two best starters of anybody in the playoffs right now, because, like, Tarik Skubal's on Detroit, but then who? You know, Tanner Bibee's on Cleveland, but then who? Gerrit Cole, and then who? You know, there's not a lot of teams in this year's playoffs that have studs 1 and 2, and that's the Phillies to me. I think their bullpen is really solid and all that, et cetera. But it's almost like Philly walked into this series thinking, these Mets, these guys are losers. Nobody cares, and they're caught with their pants down.
I'm a little confused as to, like, I don't know. I feel like Philly's lineup is full of stars, and then the Mets is kind of just full of, like, a different combination of guys that have been there before, but then, you know, a couple of young guys that maybe have played well at different parts of the season that they're just throwing out, and it's, like, working at the perfect time. I mean, what? Look at Acuna's younger brother, Luis Angel Acuna. Mm-hmm. Like, hit 300 the last month of the year, the last 2-3 weeks of the season, and then he's still on the playoff roster.
And I mean, Texas threw him away to the Mets because they knew they didn't have to pay for Scherzer or DeGrom, whichever, I think it was the Scherzer trade. They were like, oh yeah, we don't care. Yeah, you can have this guy. We were about to cut him, so good luck.
Yeah, but I mean, then him along with, like, the midseason acquisition of Jesse Winker at the deadline. Starling Marte has been around forever. He's been there before. He hasn't had a great season, but he hasn't had a bad season.
And he's batting 7th.
Exactly.
Like Starling Marte 3-4 years ago was batting 3 or 4.
And they've got defensive replacements. Like, I love how this is something that Yankees teams back in, like, you know, like their 3-4 World Series runs in the 90s, early 2000s did. They had defensive replacements, like, late in the game. And Iglesias coming in, like, to play short or moving over to third. Bader, after he pinch runs, going to center field. It just tells me that the Mets have more players than they know what to do with. And batting-wise, along with one of the best closers in baseball, Edwin Diaz, and then a ragtag group of pitchers. I mean, he's not like old man Sean Manaea, but he's kind of getting there. It feels like he's been in the bigs forever, and then all of a sudden you get a 7-inning almost shutout performance from a guy. The run basically was just the last hitter that he let on that didn't end up mattering. Like, you get performances from guys like that that you just didn't expect earlier in the season. Steve Cohen doesn't have to go pay $40, $45 million for Justin Verlander or Max Scherzer to get these performances that he was looking for. Seriously, this is what he was paying those guys for, but you're getting them from has-beens or decent to good major league players all at the right time. And to cap it, two things for you, Patrick. Their coaching staff. I don't know about Mendoza because I don't know much about him. I don't really have much faith in him personally, but two guys on his staff, John Gibbons, former Toronto Blue Jays manager.
I know Gibbons.
I love that guy. He is a gritty MF-er, and he's got like that Dan Jennings attitude that I would just run through a wall for if he were one of my coaches. And then one of their hitting coaches, former Oakland A, Eric Chavez.
Ooh.
One of the best hitters in baseball history. He's one of the best third basemen in baseball
history. He was the start of that Oakland third baseman run.
Yes,
that they
exactly. And he's one of the nicest guys in baseball history.
I
so you know.
See him on MLB Network all the time. Seems like a good dude.
And so you know that means he can communicate what his hitting skills are very well, and people are going to listen to him. Players are willing to buy into what they're selling. So it sounds like the Mets, as an organization, they don't need like the best player in baseball at every position because they've got the right vibe in the clubhouse. And I don't know if Cohen stumbled upon it or if Mendoza built the right staff and then brought in the perfect players to kind of make that magic happen. But that's kind of, it's like that magic and the feeling of the organization just all coming into the right place at the right time.
I love that you mentioned the late 90s, early 2000 Yankees, because I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and we were talking about, you remember when baseball, there was like, there was always guys. They weren't superstars, but they were guys. You know, they batted 270, played really solid defense.
Yep.
Kind of batted, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th in the lineup. They weren't flashy, but they were good. Guys like Scott Brosius.
Ah, yes.
Guys like Paul O'Neill. You know, Bernie is teetering a star versus one of these guys. But the Yankees had those guys.
Like a Stan Javier, like an Ed Sprague.
Yeah, people like that. Like just solid baseball players. And I think that's what we're seeing now is that the Mets have those. And they do rely a lot on Frankie, Nimmo, and Alonso. They do rely a lot on that, which is ultimately why I don't think they'll win the World Series. But right now, that's what they have going for them, is they are a collection, to your point, Schultze, they are a collection of baseball players. Look at their starters, Sean Manaea, Luis Severino. It's a bunch of guys, you know, Robertson, that kid Robertson who's been pitching, been starting for them. There are a bunch of guys that you would love to trade at the deadline for to bolster your staff.
Well, and then look at
these guys are being relied on.
Look at their bullpen, too. Diaz, obviously, a saves leader with the Mariners a few years ago, still one of the most elite closers in the game. Ryan Stanek, who was...
Stanek's been pitching well.
Yeah.
And very well.
Mariners gave him away, and he was with the Astros during multiple World Series runs. That's a guy you need in your bullpen. He's been there before, and he sacks up, ready to pitch in whatever situation. And then Adamon Avino. You talk about guys that you want to acquire at the deadline. That's someone when the Mariners were looking for pitching help. I wish that the Mets were just like terrible and they were just selling all season, because anyone, we'd love to have the O.
I'm going to be telling my children about a man named, speaking of O, about a man named Octavio Dotel.
Yes!
Okay, Octavio Dotel, LaTroy Hawkins. These relievers that pitch for damn near everyone.
Johnny Peralta.
These guys pitched for everyone.
Yeah, 20
they
teams.
Were always there in the playoffs. They might have been on a bad team. They might have been on a good team. It didn't matter. They were always there, acquired at the deadline. They were like, I'm going to go sign with the White Sox because I'm going to get traded in July. And I'll just it out for a little bit, and then I'll get traded. And I think a lot of those guys, especially a Ryan Stanek, is one of those dudes. Adam Ottavino is that guy. So this team is interesting. There's a lot of fun behind it. I know the national media wants the Mets to be good because it's New York, et cetera, et cetera. But we've said on the show for months that this team's not very good. But when their back's been up against the wall, they have performed. They have shown up. They have done the only thing you can do. The only thing you can do is play the game in front of you. And the Mets have done that. I think the Brewers are a better team. I think the Phillies are a better team. And the Brewers are at home, and the Phillies are wondering if they're next. They lose tomorrow. They're gone.
Yeah. I mean, if you capitalize on the right opportunities at the right time, that's kind of the beautiful thing about baseball, especially in the postseason. It's chaos, right? The Mets, comeback win. Oh, big, huge slamming win. Like, they're literally on the precipice now. And I mean, I hate to say it as a Pacific Northwest guy, but I wouldn't mind seeing a Subway Series World Series. I wouldn't. I really wouldn't.
This Mets team is fascinating, which makes this series even more fascinating. And that's what I want to get into next. As fun as the Mets story has been, the grimace, and you know, we laughed about Hawk to a girl and all that stuff, and the dysfunction that's been going on, and the fact that Verlander and Scherzer are getting paid by the Mets when they could use that money elsewhere, yet somehow they're winning. Is this more about the Mets, like, figuring it out in the end, or is this more about the Phillies kind of struggling as the game progresses? We'll get to all that next, but first, there's Schultzy with sports. There's the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. Your dollar goes further at Vancouver Ford. They treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Guilty as charged. I have a 2022 Bronco Sport in the lot right as we speak. Please don't rob me. That I absolutely love. That piece of shilt, I have to enunciate, that piece of shilt.
Good for you.
Needs to fire up the boys and get the offense going again. We've also got Aaron Judge and Mookie Betts, great regular season players in the playoffs. Neither of them can hit their booties with both hands, I responded with 2018 World Series MVP Mookie Betts would like to discuss this.
Yeah. He has hit in the postseason before. And I've got a good Yankees question for you coming up in the next hour.
Oh, fun. And I want to kind of finish up with the Phillies. We might kind of mid-segment transition from this Phillies-Mets to Dodgers-Padres, because there's just a lot to open up and divest from this. But it's funny, Zach Wheeler pitched amazing in Game 1. Okay, he was absolutely fantastic in Game 1, and that's what I expected. And the Phillies won. But I'll tell you what, in these last two games, the Mets have won. They've won with big hitting. They've been flashy. It's been the Polar Bear. It's been Nimmo. It's been Starling Marte today. You know, it's been a Jesse Winker today. You know, Jesse Winker against the Brewers had a big moment. Alonso's had a big moment. So it's kind of been dotted all over the place. But I'll tell you what, like, Game 2 and Game 3, I'm looking over at that Phillies team like, why do I think you're the better team? You have done nothing to show me that I should think you're the better team. You're just names on a piece of paper right now. Jordan, I'll ask you, does it feel to you like the Phillies, I don't know, I don't think they're not trying. You've got Bryce Harper. As long as you have Bryce Harper, like, everybody's going to give their 100%. But does it seem to you that they're just not as emotionally attached as this Mets team?
Yeah, it does feel like that. You know, I don't know. It's hard to quantify, like, playoff fire or like, how much individual guys get up for these kinds of games. But it's not like the Phillies, you know, haven't been recent World Series champions. Like, so you wonder, like, how hard it is to really, like, when you get there, like, go again at it. Like, because, I don't know, you always hear, like, after, like, a Super Bowl win or a World Series win, you know, like, I need to cherish this because it's so hard to get back here. And maybe they just, like, didn't even expect to be in this position at this point of the season. Like, I don't know. Maybe they're just leaning on the greatness of, like, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, you know, Nick Castellanos. Just be great.
JT, like, Realmuto, Trey Turner. We got studs everywhere. Just go do what you do.
It's almost like the Yankees buying a team, you know, and the Phillies really have bought a team. None of these guys, like, unless I'm incorrect, other than, like,
none of those names we mentioned are homegrown.
Well,
their homegrown guys, I believe, are like Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm.
Exactly. Those are the only two
who I love as future players. They still got some work to do now.
Yeah. And what? Yeah, Real Muto, like along with Harper, like all those guys kind of came in the same. Yeah, Trey Turner came in that same 2-3 year window. Then they fired Girardi, and it's, you know, left over with Rob
Gabe
Thompson.
Kapler.
Yeah, a couple of bad managers, but hey, Rob Thompson took them to a World Series. You know, so it just makes me wonder. It's like, well, they've been there before. If the fire's just not there at this point, they're professional athletes, right? And it's not like we're all sitting there, you know, like when we were 12 years old, thinking that every single player at every single moment when you're watching a game is giving 1,000% and wants to win the World Series. It's just not realistic. And I think we're running into that.
Yeah, there's a really cool comment that we should dive into in the offseason from Carlos Correa about the Twins at the end of the season. He said, there are guys in this clubhouse that when games become really pivotal, step up, and there are other guys in this clubhouse that when games become pivotal, become poison. And you're like, whoa, that's a bad clubhouse.
I love
that's
that
a
quote.
I love that quote too, but that means you're in a bad clubhouse, amigo.
No, it's so revealing. Let me give just a quick example. I literally watched this happen. I was in the locker room for some of the bad years of Seattle Mariners baseball doing post-game interviews, and one guy that got into it particularly one season with Eric Wedge, basically Wedge had gone out to basically try to defend him, say he was injured, but Jack Wilson wasn't really injured. He was removed from a game because he sucked and made like 3 errors. Yeah, Wedge was trying to protect him. Jack Wilson didn't let him. And Wilson essentially avoided the media the rest of the season, head down. And it just reminded me of a player that does not want to win, a player that does not want to be there. And that is exactly that kind of attitude, a guy that runs out of the locker room as soon as the ninth inning is done. That's that attitude that Carlos Correa is talking about. And that is so dangerous to a locker room, Patrick. You're right.
It's just so strange about that. Like, Dave Roberts just went out to the mound. Okay, he walked out of the dugout, and I was like, oh, he's pulling Walker Buehler. Machado just got a base hit, 2 outs, bottom of the 5. I'm like, oh, he's pulling Buehler. Never pulled his arm out of his jacket, never signaled to the bullpen. He walked up, said 4 words, and walked away. The Phillies feel like they need that. The Dodgers feel like they need that. Guess who doesn't need that? The Mets. The Mets don't need Mendoza to go out there and say, hey, it's okay, you got this.
Well, because I think, like I was just saying, they didn't necessarily think they were going to be here at this point of the season. So when you're playing better, like, what are you going to do? Like, it's like you all of a sudden end up walking into a room where there's just cash laying around, right?
Right.
I'm going to take it. So this is what the Mets are doing. They're taking this opportunity.
Literally what we call house money.
Exactly. Yeah, they're playing with house money, and the Phillies essentially just, we've already been here, so we don't really care.
I think there's an interesting thing to tag back onto this national media narrative.
Yeah.
About how they don't really watch baseball. There's this thing that I keep hearing from the national media, not baseball guys, but from people that big-time guys that are on this station, big-time guys that are on other stations.
Yeah.
They say, you know, like, there's this new feeling in baseball where there's no such thing as momentum. The momentum's not real in baseball.
Stop.
Momentum is tomorrow's starting pitcher, blah, blah, blah. That is wrong. Paging the New York Mets, paging the San Diego Padres, and dare I say, paging the Kansas City Royals. Like, if you're telling me there's not momentum in baseball, this Mets team firmly believes, not irrationally believes, firmly believes they can beat the Phillies, and right now they're the better team.
The Seattle Mariners just became the fastest team ever in baseball history to drop a 10-game division lead. And you're telling me there's no such thing as momentum?
They were cooked down the stretch.
Yeah.
There was no way they were winning games. They knew they were done, and they were done.
Yeah, and that's momentum going down. Those are the same people saying that, like, a manager doesn't affect the game. That's bullsh. Like, stop. The game isn't all, like, done on paper. It is, as we're seeing, I mean, anything can happen. And that's, once again, the beautiful thing about postseason baseball.
And that's what's amazing as we switch over and kind of give some National League, finish out this National League here where we're talking about Dodgers and Padres as well. And I'd like to slide over to them because this conversation is completely apropos for the Padres. You know, the Padres have almost, look, the Dodgers' number one rival is the Giants. It will always be the Giants. It always has been the Giants. It was the Giants when it was Polo and Ebbets, when it was Duke and Willie. It's always Dodgers Giants, always going to be Dodgers Giants. And, you know, it reminds me a little bit of Oregon UW. Oregon UW is the rivalry. They hate each other. There's a long-standing history. Teams have gone long periods of beating them every year. Then it's flipped, and teams are beating them every year. You know, Justin Herbert's a top-five drafted quarterback. Looks like the real deal in the NFL. Had a UW problem, you know? Right now, Dan Lanning has a UW problem.
Michigan has a UW problem.
Yeah, like there are these rivalries that are built in. And then there's the little kids out in Pullman, Washington that look and say, no, we're UW's rival. And UW's like, that's cute, kids. Go somewhere else. Welcome to the big boy table. And then we get to show up and punch them in the face. We almost knocked them out last year. You know, they were lucky to make the playoffs because they kicked a game-winning field goal that Michael Penix couldn't watch because they looked over little brother. And little brother came to punch them in the face. And that's what's going on in this Dodgers series right now. That fan base despises the Giants so much that they forgot that this Padres team is really, really stinking good.
I mean, I was at the Dodgers clinching game for the division series against the Padres in the regular season. And I could see like how much they hated San Diego, but without like them throwing things onto the field. That was just egregious. And the foaming at the mouth attitude there, don't need that. But that rivalry alone, I mean, doesn't that kind of fuel some of the best baseball like in history? Like when that kind of stuff's happening, it always does.
Totally. And we'll get into that, you know, coming up next as we finish out our thoughts on how this Dodger Padres series is going right now. But the Padres came to play. They came to play. They said, hey, man, we're your rival. You hate us. It's like they hate you. The Padre fans hate the Dodgers so much because they don't hate them as much as they hate them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get it.
That's what I mean about Wazoo. Like, we hate the Huskies. And when the Huskies are like, yeah, we don't care about you. We care more about Oregon. That makes us more mad. And I feel like San Diego's having that. And they're getting their cake right now.
It's true. Well,
because watching these three games right now, I know who the better team is. The Dodgers might come through, but I know who the better team is.
1-9, San Diego's better. And they've got two guys playing like gods at this point of the season so far. Kyle Higashioka, which, hello, backup catcher all of a sudden playing like a stud, and Tatis Jr., 4 home runs so far in the postseason.
And they're being led by a guy that everyone questioned his leadership. That's what I want to get into next. This Padres-Dodgers series is absolutely fascinating. From people throwing stuff on the field, to managers calling out other players, to catches in the outfield that aren't catches but are catches. Like, there is a lot to get into. So we'll do the Padres-Dodgers next. American League in the second hour, so stick with us. This is the Hot Corner, 1080 The Fan. Coming up in the second hour, we'll slide over to the American League as... Boy, I feel like those matchups are a little more unpredictable than what we got over here. Maybe it's that the emotion is just so raw in the National League, and the American League feels like professionals, just like we are here. Today is our starting pitcher. We would like to win the baseball game today.
Yeah, Aaron Boone will be shouting at you to tighten your ass up if you don't act like a pro.
Steven Vogt's like, hey, just throwing the best pitchers I got out there. So we'll get to the American League in the second hour. Plus, we got, I'll tell you what, I got some beef with Francona. Okay, so we'll get to that at the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour as well. But sticking with this Padres-Dodgers series, I think what's the most fascinating, and I don't want to, like, sit here and toot-toot-ma-toot my own horn, but I'm going to toot-toot-ma-toot my own horn here. This Dodger team has so many flaws. And this Padres team is exposing them massively. What starter for the Dodgers has come out and pitched well?
It's a good question.
That's a great question. And you didn't even answer it because there is no answer.
No.
Walker Buehler went far today. Okay, cool. You're losing.
I mean, he still gave up all 6 earned runs.
You know, they won game one, but Yamamoto was not good. And I give Yamamoto a little bit of slack as he was hurt at the end of the season, and this is kind of his first real game back. So I'll give him a little bit of slack, but he wasn't that good either. Outside of Shohei, Mookie, and Freddie, Teoscar's grand slam tonight's really the only thing I've seen this squad do.
Yep.
We were talking earlier about just needing baseball guys. The Dodgers just don't have it.
Well, even the way that like the national television coverage of the Dodgers is going, it's obvious why they want the Dodgers to be there. One, because it's Los Angeles. Two, because of Shohei Ohtani. What was that graphic? Like, Shohei Ohtani, three batters away. I saw a tweet that said, like, oh, they're making Shohei Ohtani out to be the boogeyman with this. And it's like, I get that, like, in maybe, like, a Barry Bonds, you know, historic all-time, I'm chasing Hank Aaron's record, like, 756 to break. And, yeah, like, you can see this in three batters, like, stick around, but... I love Ohtani. He's the greatest baseball player of all time. But, like, if that's all we're looking at for the Dodgers, as you say, I mean, they do have Mookie Betts as well. Although, what is he, like, 0 for 20-something coming into tonight?
Before,
like,
the home run tonight, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, he's, I mean, Freddie Freeman, he's kind of been quiet as well. Like, it's just, it's a lineup full of highly paid dudes that aren't doing diddly.
I was on Reddit during the second inning of the Mets-Phillies game today. And somebody posted a meme that was a live look-in on the Mets-Phillies, and it was Shohei's face, and it says, he will be batting in 4 hours.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was a meme. It was a joke. Yeah. But that's what the joke was. Okay. The joke was like, I know you're sitting here watching Mets-Phillies, but just so you know, coming up on Fox a little bit later today, in 4 hours, Shohei Ohtani will attempt to hit a baseball.
He'll be on this screen.
And that's why I think... You know, that's why I think a lot of the national media and even baseball itself, they want this. They want the drama. Dodgers, Padres. I would think Mets, Phillies would be a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
I think as a longtime AL Central guy, Cleveland, Detroit is a huge deal for me right now. If I lose to the Tigers, I'm going to blow my brains out. Like, if I lose to the Yankees, if I lose to the Astros, like, even a Mariners team or a Rangers team or a Rays team or an Orioles team, that's fine. But if I lose to the Tigers, I'm freaking out. I can't lose to the Tigers. That's my division losers. Those guys are in the basement. And the national media is doing a really good job with this Padres-Dodgers series of blowing everything up, looking at everything in the tiniest minuscule. Jerks and Profar going into the outfield to rob that home run and having a stare down with a fan, which then creates someone throwing a ball on the field and then other people throwing other objects, which I don't condone, but that's trauma. That's must-watch TV. Manny Machado ditches a ball into the Dodger bullpen. It's like, oh, hey, he's throwing at Dave Roberts. And it's like, well, I'm pretty sure if Manny wanted to hit Dave Roberts, he would hit him.
Yeah, he threw it at the ground.
That guy plays third base and can throw it to first on a rope. I'm pretty sure he can throw the baseball wherever he wants.
Yeah.
But it's this manufactured drama to heighten this series, which is fascinating because this series doesn't even need any of that manufacturing. Just watching the play on the field is high stakes. You can see the way Fernando Tatis swings a bat. You can see that Shohei is probably trying a little too hard. You can see that Mookie is trying to be Mookie. You can see that Freddie's off. But you can see that Machado has become a leader in his 30s. They have always said he's not a leader. He pulls them all aside in game two. Pulls everybody into a team meeting in the middle of the game, in the dugout. They asked, what did Machado say in that? He's like, there's a lot of words I can't say.
Yeah, a lot of F.
Because he looked at him and just said, guys, do your bleeping jobs. Let's get this going. And I think this San Diego Padres team reeks, in my opinion, of the 04 Boston Red Sox with less talent.
Ooh, okay.
That Red Sox team in 04 had starters up the wazoo. King has been good. Tonight he got roughed up later on. You get no Musgrove now with the Tommy John, RIP. Dylan Cease didn't look awesome. So that's my only difference. But in terms of mojo, in terms of, like, you remember in 04, the lovable idiots? You know, the idiots, that's what they call them, Cowboy Up.
Something, yeah.
And so, you know, Kevin Millar and...
Doug Mankiewicz, yeah.
They had a bunch of dudes that were just like...
Veritek.
They had a bunch of dudes that were just like, yeah, man, I'm Scott Brosius. Nobody knows who I am, but I'm going to get a big hit in a World Series. More so than the Mets. I think the Mets are fun. I think they're silly. I think they're goofy. I think it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this team continues to do this. The Padres are the real deal, though.
The Padres, I mean, it's actually kind of similar to what the Mets, I feel like, other than maybe like two positions more with star players. The Padres are filled out with Jerickson Profar, who's a good player, having a really good couple of years.
The most amazing season he's ever had in his life.
Jackson Merrill, who probably a rookie of the year.
It's the future.
And we had no idea that the Padres were going to get that at the beginning of the season. I mean, we
still got four shortstops.
Exactly. We've always joked about
Sung Kim's not even healthy. He's not even playing.
No, but David Peralta, veteran who's been around forever, has made up for that and seemingly has filled in the gaps. So when you look at them 1-9,
they got four shortstops and none of them play shortstop.
Yeah, and then Cronenworth's been fine, and obviously they acquired Arias mid-season or like 2 months into the season.
Third batting title in three seasons for three different teams.
Exactly. So he's always on base, and the Dodgers, I mean, like, I frankly question their lineup construction when they're taking Andy Pages out in the postseason and then throwing, like, Tommy Edmund, sure, but Miguel Rojas, you want to put Rojas in and give him at-bats at shortstop instead of giving Pages at-bats in the outfield? Like, Roberts, I feel like maybe he's just, like, wondering what to do at this point. It's mismanagement, like, to the max, in my opinion, because that alone is an easy decision for me. Like, don't, like, Enrique Hernandez, Kike's like 0-for-2 in his pinch hits so far, so you can't trust him like he could before.
Miguel Rojas, Tommy Edamame, whatever exactly. His name is.
Like, former Mariner Chris Taylor, it's like, yo, these guys are all the heroes of yesteryear. Can they be heroes again? I mean, maybe, but when the Dodgers are in the postseason at this point, you're expecting Freddie Freeman to be slamming. You're expecting Mookie to be slamming every game instead of, you know, going 0-for-20, whatever, until he hits one.
We'll get out on this. Let me ask you this question. This game, we're in the seventh still. It's 6-5 Padres. If the Padres win, this series is over.
Yes.
If the Dodgers win, I don't believe the series is over. Are those? Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, no, that's fair, because then you've got a, what? It's a 2-2 tie.
It'd be 2-2.
Yeah. No, the series is...
No, it's 1-1 right now.
Oh, sorry,
now.
So sorry. So it'd be, yeah.
It'd be 2-1. Whoever goes
up. 2-1 Dodgers.
But I feel like if the Padres go up 2-1, the series is over. But if the Dodgers go up 2-1, I don't think it's over.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair statement. Dodgers just can't... You're saying the Dodgers can't close. Coffee's for closers, and the Dodgers can't drink a cup of coffee right now.
That's what I'm saying.
I gotcha.
And a lot of that falls on Dave Roberts. If they lose to the Padres right now, I fire Dave Roberts.
Really?
And I know I've been on that train for a while.
I don't know.
And we'll talk about Yankees Royals coming up next. But, like, if Aaron Boone loses the Royals, you're fired.
You think so?
How can that not be the same standard for Dave Roberts?
Because Dave Roberts has won 11 of 12 division titles and technically a World Series in that, and they've been to, what, two more?
What was that word you said before, World Series?
Technically.
Yeah, exactly.
But they've been to how many? Two more. So.
Cool. Ask Bobby Cox how that went.
Well, Bobby Cox was one of the greatest.
Ask Marv Levy how that went.
Bobby Cox is still one of the greatest managers of Braves history of all time, and they won World Series.
I understand,
still.
Man, but horseshoes and hand grenades, dude. Like...
Well, you
gotta eventually get it done.
You can't all. What do you? What do
you? When you spend $1 billion, you better get it done.
They've gotten close a lot.
Close isn't good enough.
Who's better than Dave Roberts? And see, this is where I kind of differ with you. Like
Terry Francona.
Well, okay,
we just didn't know he was available.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Yeah, it's like when Bruce Bochy and Dusty Baker came out. It's like, whoa!
What? How'd the Rangers get Bochy?
Come on!
He was available? He applied?
No, but who's better than Dave Roberts? Like, Aaron Boone, I do believe the Yankees probably could do better than Aaron Boone, but, like, who are the Dodgers going to go get that's better than Dave Roberts? Go back to Don Mattingly? Like, come on.
No, I'd rather have Joe Maddon.
I love Joe Maddon. I wanted the Mariners before the Dan Wilson hire. I wanted the Mariners to look at Joe Maddon this offseason. I did, yeah.
All right, that's enough of this. Boy, I can't wait. I hope this series better go five. An entertaining standpoint, just please give me five games.
Like you say, if the Dodgers win game three, then it probably will go five. But yeah, San Diego's got it in the bag if they win.
Please, come on. But give me five, just for funsies. Like Phillies, same to you. Give me five.
I don't know. You know what? watching the Dodgers get ousted just quickly, like last season, like when all the fans were freaking out saying the format needed to be changed. Like, I'd be willing
it's
to
rigged against
again.
Us. Like, what are you, Trump? Like, no, man, you lost.
Oh, the good teams shouldn't play until the very, very what? So they automatically get into the World Series? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, like back in 1948, where the American League winner and the National League winner just played in a World Series?
What was the first ever like college football game? Like 1869, Rutgers v. Princeton. They were both named national champions that year. That's what everybody wants. Let's do that for baseball. Everybody's a champion.
All right, when we come back, loaded second hour, we'll get into, as I mentioned, Terry Francona. He's back in baseball, and boy, am I mad about it. Never thought I'd say that in my entire life. Plus, we'll dive into the American League Series, which is, if you're a nerdy baseball fan, that's some nerdy baseball. Loaded second hour. Don't go anywhere. Hot Corner, me and Schultzy tonight, 1080 The Fan.
Now, you're kissing Chase Utley, and that's it.
Why are you pushing Chase Utley on me? It's starting to get weird.
This is the Hot Corner.
Okay, look, I have a plan, all right? And it involves you getting this letter to him when you got out there to kiss him. Now, I have given this to Major League Baseball, his lawyer, his manager, his mom, and he has not gotten back to me, which means he hasn't gotten it yet. So just...
Did you write a love letter to Chase Utley?
With Patrick Harris and Joe Fisher.
In a lot of ways, yes, I do love him, but that is not a love letter in the way that you're thinking of it, okay? There's nothing sexual or...
Okay. That sounds good. I'm gonna read it. Dear Chase, they're stickers. Yeah. My God.
On the Odyssey app.
Dear Chase, I feel like I can call you Chase because you and me are so much alike. I would love to meet you someday. It would be great to have a catch. I know I can't throw as fast as you, but I think you would be impressed with my speed. Did you have a good relationship with your father? Me neither.
And 1080.
These are all things we can talk about and more. I am sure our relationship would be a real home run.
The Fan.
Welcome to the second hour of the Hot Corner. You're missing the first hour. You can download that at the Fan Podcast at 1080thefan.com, the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts, including places that rhyme with Machotify. Manny Machotify. You can still get your stuff there wherever you download your podcasts. Grab a listen, like, and subscribe. No fair or foul this week, as Schultzy and I decided we just got too much baseball to talk about. None of this messing around.
Lots going on this
week. We're
not
screwing around today.
No A-Rod, like World Series, like breaking news, signing a new contract with the Yankees. But
go ahead.
No, sorry. Some more teams going to be playing under the MLB video option now. They're going to be on MLB.com as opposed to on TV. So
I actually can't wait for the offseason. Because, Schultzy, we got so many stories to get into in the offseason with the RSNs. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about, like, Charlie Blackmon and that kid for the Pirates that needed, like, one more plate appearance for a bonus and didn't get it. Stuff like that. Like, we have so much to get into. Umpiring, robots, etc. I'm actually really excited for the offseason. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
No, totally.
We got a lot in front of us right now.
There's still, what, technically a month left of the season.
And right now, if you had to pick, right now, from what you've seen, okay, let's pretend this Dodger-Padre game is 6-6, okay? It's 6-5. Let's pretend it's 6-6. Who's your choice to win it all right now?
Wait, like the World Series? Yeah. Just everything?
It's tough to say, huh?
I mean, like, if you're asking me who I think's going to be there, at this point, the Padres do look like the best team in the National League. So
they
I've
sure
got to say San Diego v. like Kansas City.
Let's go, baby.
Who I want to be there. I wouldn't mind a Subway Series.
Sure,
you know, I think
sure.
That the
you
classic,
said that earlier.
Yeah, yeah, baseball fan in me would like that.
Yep,
but
you
yeah,
said
like,
that earlier.
I think it's going to be a wacky World Series. Like, hell, Detroit could end up making a run.
I mean, last year was a wacky World Series. I thought Texas-Arizona was a great World Series. You know, it's not David Freese on the Cardinals. It's not, you know, Ben Zobrist for the Cubs in
16. No, it's Mitch Garver on the Rangers.
You know, but I thought Rangers Diamondbacks was a good series last year.
No, we all found out who Adolis Garcia was. Like, the Rangers were pretty stacked.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that was Corey Seager is a two-time MVP in the American League and National League.
Marcus,
last time I saw that, that's Frank Robinson.
Well, and Marcus Semien still hitting 300 last season. Like, they were loaded from 1-9 with Bochy, and there you go.
I think we're in a good spot. So let's turn our eyes over to the American League. And it's funny because talking about this Yankee Royals series to me is very similar as talking to this Dodger Padres series. The difference is the Padres have the financial gains. They have the years of building to get to this point. They have superstars all over the place. And that's why they can give the Dodgers a run for their money. This Royals team, I'm going to sit here. This is when I'll tap a two on my shoulder here and take credit for it. I told you this Royals team was going to be good. They spent money on the bullpen. They've got veteran starters. And they are playing a Yankee team that, in my opinion, is scared to lose. You talked about the Mets with house money. They just walked into a room and there's cash everywhere. Okay? Well, the Kansas City Royals are, you know, DuckTales. What's the uncle on DuckTales, the rich? Ducky McScrooge or something like that.
Yeah.
He dives into his giant safe of coins. That's the Royals. The Royals. You're ahead of schedule. You got Bobby Witt. Yeah, but you remind me of the Astros in 2015. The Astros made the playoffs. Everybody was like, it's about 16 for the Astros. They made the playoffs in 15. They lost to the Royals. But boy, who did win the World Series? But boy, they gave the Royals a hell of a time in that series. And now here are the Royals right now doing the same thing to the Yankees. When I watch these two games, the Royals to me are the better team. The Yankees, if it's not Judge and Soto, who's it going to be? Huh? Who's it going to be? It's not going to be Carlos Rodon. It's not going to be Giancarlo Stanton. You know, I'd like to see a guy like Austin Wells step up a little bit. Alex Verdugo had a good game the other night.
Jazz Chisholm, I know he's hit a homer, but like, seriously, they brought him in. And since that huge, four homers, five homers in 72 hours, I haven't really heard much from Chisholm.
Yeah, what scares you about the Yankees if you can get around Soto and Judge? Now, that's a big if. But if you can get around Soto and Judge, what are you scared of?
Yeah, I mean, Stanton's 1-for-8 so far, so not much.
Rizzo's hurt. He didn't even make the roster.
Wells was batting cleanup the other night, and I'm like, ooh, the Yankees looking at Austin Wells batting cleanup. He's no Cal Raleigh, I'm sorry.
And I like Wells for the future of the Yankees. I really do. You know, I don't know if it's the mustache, but he gives me Thurman Munson vibes. You know, just like a really solid, every day-to-day kind of player, positive, a leader. I like Austin Wells for the future of the Yankees, but I'm not ready for him now. He's not ready for it now.
Well, the Yankees haven't been ready at catcher since Jorge Posada retired. I mean, Gary Sanchez wasn't really, like, he had two good seasons and then was nothing. Like, literally, they have been struggling at that position for 20 years.
And you could argue that Jorge Posada was a little bit of struggle from time to time. Good hitter.
Oh, you know, he was
not the most amazing catcher.
Never a defensive guy. He was always a hitter first. People ran
like a Javi Lopez in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, and that back in the day when the offensive catcher, I mean, it was a little bit more rare. It was Posada. It was like Ivan Rodriguez. I'm not like maybe one other, but in the 90s, no, he was it basically, other than Ivan.
Tomorrow, oh, dude, we got four games tomorrow? Oh, baby.
Yes, yeah, it goes 4-2-2, and then 4.
Why is Pierre's got to work all day tomorrow?
Sucks.
Royals-Yankees tomorrow is going to be Schmidt against Seth Lugo. Now, let me tell you what. If Seth Lugo goes out there and does what he did for my fantasy team all year, you can mark the Yankees dead.
I mean, the Royals are, I hate to say it, but they're not like loaded like the Yankees, but they got guys at every position.
So that's what I'm asking. How did we get here, Jordan? How did we get here to this point where the best team in the National League, the Dodgers, record-wise, the best team in the American League, the Yankees, record-wise, get into this division series and they look outmatched? How did we get here?
I mean, when you've got... I feel like the Royals have had, since their last World Series win in, 2015, 2016?
Royals won in 15.
Thank you, in 15.
Lost in 14 to Madison Bumgarner, won in 15.
They've had kind of that, like, legacy feel, even though they're not really necessarily a team that you feel like kept guys around, but I think it's Salvador Perez. I mean, he's, like, probably, like, the one guy left.
Bonafide Hall of Famer.
But literally, I feel like he is... a locker room changer like a Carlos Santana is, you know, when he came in for the Mariners, like for the Twins, huge locker room impact like Manny Machado is, like Salvador Perez and hitting 300 plus, 330. I mean, you throw him in at catcher in the postseason because thankfully there's not as many games, so he doesn't have to DH. It frees up Vinny Pasquantino coming off the IL to then go DH, and then that means you can put Tommy Pham in the outfield. Like, yep. The Royals have options. Hunter Pence, who was hitting really terribly at the beginning of the season, really turned out in the second half. You had Adam Frazier, former Mariner, that was like getting like three or four different clutch hits. So like kind of like the Mets, they, when they needed to, they played really good baseball, and so now they're here.
And I think what the Royals did really well that you were kind of hitting on, and this is what I was preaching at the beginning of the season about this Royals team, is they signed vets. They signed veterans. And they rely on Bobby Witt a lot, as you should. The Mariners rely heavily on Julio.
Yep.
Look at the Braves. Acuna goes down, and they struggle. They relied on him a lot. Albies goes down. When he comes back, Albies is playing out of his mind, but he can't switch hit because his wrist hurts. You know, like, there are these young superstars that people do heavily rely on, and Kansas City is heavily relying on, but they've seen. Talking about Vinny Pasquantino, talking about these guys, Sal Perez, old man Perez, who's clearly the leader. I heard this interview with Tommy Pham. He was on MLB Network around Labor Day. I was in Seattle and I was listening to MLB Network, and they interviewed Tommy Pham, and they were like, what kind of advice are you giving to Bobby Witt as an up-and-coming superstar on a playoff push? What are you telling him? What are you talking to him about to help him become the future leader? And Tommy Pham says, well, Bobby Witt's telling me things. Like, that guy is our leader.
That's pretty awesome.
So if you can give me Sal Perez, old man, quote-unquote Sal Perez, who's a World Series champion and a future Hall of Famer, his leadership on top of some kid that you rely on who also happens to be a leader, that's dangerous. Because I don't think the Yanks have that. You got Garrett Cole, Aaron Judge, and Juan Soto. And Aaron Judge has done squadouche, and Cole got touched up a bit in game one. As far as the top teams go, and I know we talked about the Dodgers and Padres and me not having faith in the Dodgers, but the Padres are a good team. They're a World Series team. The Royals are not a World Series team. And no, they're going to take you to five.
Not quite. No.
And they're going to take you to five.
No.
So what does that say about you? If a team that's not ready to win a World Series and you're neck and neck with them, it sounds like to me the New York Yankees are not ready to win the World Series.
I mean, they didn't look like they were ready from game one this year. They're a good team. Like, I remember people freaking out about, like, their bats opening up the season, you know, really well, but we were still talking about, well, where's their pitching? And the Mariners proved to us, unfortunately, that you can have five elite pitchers, but if you don't hit, you're not going to get to the playoffs. But the Yankees don't even have, like, two elite pitchers. I'm sorry. Garrett Cole and nobody else, you know, funky throwing Nestor Cortez ain't going to get you a World Series. You're looking for like that 1-2-3 punch that you've expected from Yankees yesteryear pitching staff. It's not there.
It's not Clemens, Pettit, no. And El Duque coming out of that pen.
Yeah, there's no David Cone and then David Wells right after him. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, and there's no, you know, there's no Wetland and Mo Rivera coming out of that bullpen either.
Exactly, and that's definitely, you've seen like, and the Cleveland Indians have this in Class A, you know, to a point where like, I feel like the Yankees' best pitcher is like Clay Holmes, essentially. You're seeing these guys every night, and Clay Holmes was getting his ass bitten in August. And this is the problem that I was saying.
Tied for most blown saves in a season, Clay Holmes.
Yeah, but yet, yeah, elite hitters are going to face him pretty much every night in the playoffs. And this is what I was saying the problem would have been for the Mariners if they made the playoffs, is their bullpen ain't elite enough. And I think we're seeing, unfortunately, the bullpen for New York as well as their starting pitching just ain't elite enough.
And that's where we'll go to next. Talking about bullpens, the most elite bullpen in the playoffs got a little bit exposed yesterday. Is this going to come back and bite them because they had a chance? We'll get to the other side of the American League bracket next. That's Jordan Schultz. I'm Patrick Harris, 1080 The Fan. If you're hearing that news, that music, the Padres have brought in their closer, Robert Suarez. Lights out in the stadium. Song up on blast. And Suarez coming out to the mound. Two outs in the bottom of the eighth. Or the top of the eighth, excuse me. He's going to go for a four-out save here. And let me tell you what, baby. I'm here for it. I'm absolutely here for it. And I'll be here for you, baby, all night long. I had to.
Thank you.
I had to. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll dive into the Cincinnati Reds and their new managerial choice and why that really enrages the largest fan of Terry Francona you've ever met in your entire life. We'll get to that in about 15 minutes, but we do need to give some love over to the other side of the bracket in the American League, and that is Cleveland and Detroit. I love, love, and just kind of like what we're seeing here with Dodgers, Padres, what we're seeing with Mets, Phillies. I love in this portion of the playoff bracket when you get two division teams. They've seen each other. It used to be 19 times a season. Now it's 13 times a season, but that's still a lot.
Yeah.
You know these teams. You know these guys. You know their ins, their outs. AJ Hinch. And that's where I want to start. AJ Hinch, you know, I hate the Trashtros. I think it's one of the biggest scandals in the history of Major League Baseball that doesn't get enough credit, doesn't get enough coverage, and doesn't get enough ramifications. We'll see what happens when Jose Altuve comes up on the Hall of Fame ballot. His numbers do say that he is a Hall of Famer, but yo, man, you did some shady, shady stuff. Some real shady stuff. And A.J. Hinch was there, but I never doubted the fact that A.J. Hinch is a damn good manager.
Oh, yeah. That's not in question.
And you are seeing that now with the Tigers. You are absolutely seeing that. They have no player on their team with 100 RBIs. They have no player on their team with 30 home runs. They have no player on their team that's really an all-star outside of Tarik Skubal. Okay, yet this team is in the playoffs. Okay, congratulations. Kudos. Got it. Cleveland blows you out game one, as they should. Cleveland's the better team. Cleveland, with the way the Yankees are playing right now, if they were to scoot by the Royals and Cleveland gets by the Tigers, I'd take the Clevelands to win that series, no doubt about it. Not because I'm a fan, but because they're the better team. Cleveland missed an insane opportunity yesterday. And knowing baseball the way we watch baseball, this better not hurt you. You got Skubal out of the game in a 0-0 game. Now, the Tigers' bullpen is solid, but you got past Skubal without being down runs. Boyd pitched really well for you. You got past Skubal without giving up runs yourself. This is your golden opportunity to slam the door. And Cleveland missed it because Skubal's going to throw game five if it goes to game five. And do you want to play Tarik Skubal again in game five? I don't. And the other fascinating part is this is why playoffs are different than everything else.
Yep.
Cleveland's got the best bullpen in all of the postseason. It's not even close, whether it's Hunter Gaddis or Emmanuel Clase, whoever it is, like that 6, 7, 8, 9 lineup that Stephen Vogt can throw out there every night on the mound to hold, save, and close out games is the best we've got in baseball right now.
I mean, can I have you guess how many times
Cade Smith?
How many times Clase has given up 3 runs in 1 appearance all season?
How many?
0 until that game.
Exactly.
I don't even think he's given up 2 in 1 game.
But this is where you make your bones as a manager.
Yep.
Stephen Vogt brought him in the 8th. It was a bad decision. He got out in the 8th, but how many multi-inning save situations has Emmanuel Clase been in this year?
That's a good question. I honestly don't know.
The answer is 1.
Okay, so that's really
the answer
not
is now 2.
That's not his forte.
It's
either.
Not his forte. Okay. He's a 1-inning guy. But in classic Francona fashion, which we'll get to in about 10 minutes, you throw the best arm you got.
Yeah, isn't that what elite pitchers do
you
in the
do
postseason?
In that situation in the postseason, closers out the door. You know, Josh Hader, if I need you in the 7th, you're coming in the 7th. If I need you in the 10th, you're coming in the 10th. I don't think Stephen Vogt needed to put Clase in the 8th.
Really? Okay.
And he got out of it, but in the 9th, Carpenter hits a 3-run bomb off him. He gives up a base hit. He walks a guy, and then boom, it's 3-0, and you're out. I think Cleveland is the better team. I think they will prevail in this series, but that was a golden opportunity missed. Tarik Skubal threw like the reigning Cy Young winner did. And the other guy that I want to argue is the Cy Young winner blew it. You had your chance and they missed it.
Guardians, too. I think they did get kind of lucky. If it weren't for Matthew Boyd pitching, what, like 4 or 5 shutout innings in that game one?
5, yeah.
Former Oregon State product, by the way.
Game two.
Thank you.
Tanner Bibee was on fire game one.
Thank you. Yeah, sorry about that. I mean, if it weren't for that, then they wouldn't have even been in that game. So it's just crazy to see. I guess.
That's what I mean. Like, you had a guy that pitched out of his mind and you survived Skubal.
Mm hmm.
You got to win that game.
Yeah, but that's what we're saying. It's crazy to see this offense that was so good at the beginning of the year, the changing of the stadium, you know, stuff, taking away things to, like, get an air pocket in for more home runs to go out. Like, I mean, Stephen Kwan, he's been hitting ass for the last 2 months of the regular season going into the playoffs. It seems like all those guys we were hearing about just kind of, we're not now. Like, I don't think the Naylor brothers are hitting off their booties anymore.
No. Big Naylor, big boy.
Josh Naylor. He had a great year.
He's had a good postseason.
Okay.
He was good. He was great in game one. He had a hit in game two when it was needed, but nothing came from it. This can't be the Jose Ramirez show. And if you get past Skubal, you got to make him pay for it. That's how you go to a World Series.
Well, in this situation, too, A.J. Hanch is way more experienced than Stephen Vogt.
Without a doubt.
So who's going to be the battle of minds? Who's going to be the winner? It's always going to be A.J. Hinch.
It's always going to be A.J. Hinch. Similar to how it could be in Cincinnati. We'll get to that next. But first, I'll toss it over to Schultzy with sports. Padres still up 6-5 on the Dodgers. As we're in the bottom of the eighth, there is one out as Machado just flied out, infield fly. This game we'll keep an eye on as, God, I love baseball. It's just must watch baseball. You know what I mean? I've been listening to a lot of baseball on the radio still in the playoffs, and I absolutely love it. It's my favorite thing in the world. I like hearing Homer calls. You know, I'm lucky as a Cleveland Guardians fan that I get Tom Hamilton.
Down goes Anderson! Just
as we did back in the day as you and me as kids, Jordan, we got Dave Niehaus on calls, and that's just the best thing you could ever imagine to hear.
I still get goosebumps.
And it's tough when you watch a guy like Michael Kay call an Astros Detroit game. You're like, this is garbage.
Really? I actually was a fan.
Oh, really? Maybe I just don't like Michael Kay.
Maybe. You know what? Maybe. But I kind of thought it had a big game feel. And then hearing Bob Costas also on the call.
Oh, my God, dude. You're not Vin Scully. Shut up.
No, that was getting a little insufferable. Like, I kind of thought we were going to get like Bob Costas when he was calling games in like the mid-90s. He actually called.
He was great in the mid-90s.
He called one of the Mariners' famous 95 games, either the season, like a tiebreaker against the Angels, where Luis Soho rounded the bases, or one of their 5 in that, you know, game, their ALDS series. I think like game 2 or 3 was Edgar hitting the double. But like Bob Costas was in on that series. So I was kind of expecting like yesteryear Bob Costas. But yeah, you're right.
And now he's like, yeah. And the Yankees are playing the Royals. And let me tell you, there was this one time I talked to George Brett. Royal famous, and you're like, yo, dude,
no kidding.
You're not Vin. You can't tell stories like that, man, Bob. You are the Olympics guy. You're the World Series guy. This doesn't work.
No, I hear that.
So yeah. I've been listening to local radio guys because it's more fun. That being said, I got a bone to pick. I got a real big bone to pick. I'm very, very frustrated, very, very upset. When I heard this, Joe texts me. My absent co-host today, I can see the empty chair just disappointed. He's got like a stepdad vibe to it over there. I caught the news that Terry Francona will be the new manager of the Cincinnati Reds. Now, if you look at this from a baseball standpoint, this is probably a fantastic hire. This is a home run hire for the Reds. They got a bunch of kids. We're up and coming. Ellie De La Cruz, Hunter Green. They got
Spencer
some pieces.
Steer.
They got Encarnacion Stan. Like, they've got some kids that this could be a team for the future. And clearly, David Bell was not working. That was not working. I thought it would, but it eventually did not. This is a slam dunk home run hire for Cincinnati. You couldn't manage the Guardians this year? where could go to the World Series, and
didn't he need like two surgeries or something like that? Like,
yeah, but you're back now, huh? You couldn't just like take a season off and then maybe take this core we got here to maybe win a World Series, huh?
You sound like me, bitter when Chip Kelly left the Oregon Ducks.
What? Dude. What is wrong with you, man? You had to retire because your stomach problems, your hernia problems. We were worried about your health, amigo. We love you. We want you to live a long, luxurious, retired life. You can't go take the job in the same state. You don't even got to move. You could stay with us. I like Stephen Vogt, but we could have you. Tito, you're us. Outside of Charlie Manuel and Mike Hargrove, Tito. I got drunk one night in Pullman, the night the Cleveland Indians hired Terry Francona. I got so stinking drunk, and I was yelling at the bar the whole night, Tito, Tito, we're going to the World Series. I yelled it so much that I walked home hammered and stopped at the grocery store, the IGA, down there, Dismore's at the bottom of Stadium and Grand, shout out Cougs. And I walked in there and I bought two frozen Totino's pizza because I was so drunk I thought it said Tito's pizza.
Tito's pizza, baby.
And I was like, we're having Tito's pizza tonight. And Terry took us to a World Series in 16, and I love you for it. I'm just mad that you're not with us. Fantastic hire, though, right?
I mean, it was
fantastic hire.
It was kind of out of the blue. It was like a Dusty Baker, like all of a sudden the Astros calling him coming out of retirement. Same thing that the Texas Rangers did with Bruce Bochy. The same thing the Chicago White Sox did with Tony La Russa, albeit he was way past his prime. I mean, it's kind of it's an upset, huge upset when you get one of these guys running your organization. And obviously the Reds, it kind of tells you exactly where they are and how attractive of a team they are if somebody legendary as,
I was surprised to see the job being as desirable as it was.
Yeah, because, I mean, he beat out the likes of, like, Scott Servais and a couple of other, like, kind of mediocre managerial names out there, none of which I thought were better than David Bell. But, whoever made this decision in the dark of night to say, let's just take a shot and see if he'll accept our call.
And that's what it was. They just shot a phone call over to him and said, hey, are you interested in this gig? And he said, you know what? I am interested in this gig. Quote, it just felt right.
I look at that roster, I'd say, yeah, you need to add some pitching, but you got that kid Marte from the Mariners in that original trade for Suarez that I think he's coming back now from his suspension. So you've got one of your infield spots filled, you've still got Steer. Like, they've literally got 5 of 9 positions with young kids playing very well.
And you've got the most electrifying player in baseball not named Ohtani, Soto, or Judge.
It's true.
You know what I'm mostly scared of? So when Tito retired and Stephen Vogt got the job in Cleveland, the staff is basically the same. It's Stephen Vogt and Tito's staff.
Oh, you think
like
Tito's?
Carl Willis is still there? Like
former Mariner.
We love him. We love him. He's our pitching coach. We absolutely love him. He does everything for us. He creates Cy Young winners.
Yes.
He gets guys that shouldn't be like Alex Cobb is going to throw well tomorrow because of Willis. Is he the new pitching coach for the Cincinnati Reds at the end of the season?
Probably.
Like, that's going to just crush me.
I'm sorry.
Then I'm going to go back into the depths, and I'm going to die because the man who survived, who brought me back to life.
I mean, Willis is okay. Like, it's not like the pitching staff, and this isn't Willis's fault. It was that great this year anyways. So, come on.
Do you think, like, the Cardinals and the Cubs and the Brewers are like, oh, crap? Or do you think they're just like, and the Reds will be the Reds.
No, I mean,
how many wins? What's Terry Francona's WAR as a manager?
I mean, that's a good question. If you're looking like
5
around the division, I don't really see the Cubs doing much better than they did last year. The Pirates, they made a run, and middle of this season they were kind of in it. I think there were a couple of games, like big turning points, and obviously they've got a cheap owner that kind of decided the direction, and it was just really, last month and a half wasn't good for them. Like, I don't know, St. Louis, like, everybody finished so far behind Milwaukee that I don't think anybody else in the division. I mean, yeah, they see Terry Francona as, like, a big get, but can he, if you're asking what the WARA is, make a 16-game difference up? I'm not sure he can. Might be able to slip into the wild card his first year, but yeah, they were 16 games out of first place. Brewers won 93 games, and the Cardinals in second place only won 83, and they were still 6 games behind that.
Of course, Baseball Reference has Terry Francona managerial stats.
Of course they do.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You notice every team that he's managed for always has red? Always. He can't not manage for a team with red. It's either Cincinnati Reds, up red. Cleveland Guardians, Indians, red. Boston Red Sox, Philadelphia Phillies. Always red.
Maybe the man likes red.
He was a coach. Go find this random picture of him. There is a coach photo of Terry Francona with the Oakland A's, and that's just funny to see. It kind of throws you off.
Just see him not in red, and you're exactly. Like, this don't make sense, bud.
It was right before he got hired by the Red Sox, I believe. It's a funny picture to look.
That is absolutely fantastic. Well, the Dodgers and the Padres are down to it. Suarez has got 2 outs in the top of the 9th, looking to get Gavin Lux out and send this bad boy into tomorrow. And speaking of tomorrow, we'll get to that next. We'll wrap up this bad boy hot corner to Eddie the Fan. We'll be back next week with some more playoff get through. We'll be in the AL and NLCS. We'll be in the LCSs. So that will be fun to get into. Joe Fish will be back with us. But Jordan, I'm going to ask you, we got a full slate tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
I'm curious as to why there wasn't why does Cleveland and Detroit and New York and Kansas City get a day off between games 1 and 2?
I mean, the
answer is the NFL.
You can't compete directly with Sunday football, right?
But I'm still upset about it.
College football apparently is fine. Because that was weird, slipping in all those baseball games.
Yeah, all those
games. Very busy college football Saturday. 5 of the top 11 teams upset. Like, it was a wacky one.
That was crazy. But we can play baseball games. But the NFL, it's like, ooh, no. We'll do Mets and Phillies and Dodgers, Padres, but we can't. Anyway, so tomorrow is a couple of game 3s and a couple of game 4s. We got Guardians, Tigers, Alex Kopp versus undecided for Detroit. I haven't seen him throw this year, but I hope he's good. Suarez for the Phillies against Quintana, who actually had a really nice start the other day for the Mets. Yankees, Royals at 4 o'clock. That'll be Schmidt versus Lugo, and no word yet on Dodgers-Padres tomorrow. I think this is the Joe Musgrove slot for the Padres, so I'm not sure what they are going to do. They'll probably throw a bullpen game of some type, I would think.
Yeah, like, what do you think the Dodgers, I mean, backs up against the wall, everything changes, right?
Yeah, I don't know what they throw. I'll tell you what, the game of the day that I think is going to be the most fascinating to watch is Yanks-Royals.
I agree.
Yeah, I think Lugo goes out there and pitches well.
And last time, I think it was last season or the season before, whenever the Yankees were in, Clark Schmidt, he got lit up in the playoffs before. Mm-hmm. So not done too well.
I don't have faith in this at all. I like that Yankees-Royals game. Now, as a diehard Cleveland fan, you know what I really hate? You know what I really love, Jordan?
Tell me.
Why is it that to watch my team, I got to watch games at noon and 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock?
Sorry, bro.
Just no love for the Midwest, huh?
I mean, at least you work in a place where you can have the TVs on, access to basically everything at once.
That's the truth, man. But, like, it's almost 9 o'clock. If you're a Dodgers-Padres fan, you're at the bar right now.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, I'm getting hammed on a Tuesday. Who cares?
Yeah. No,
I watched a hell of a game tonight. Nope. I'm going to watch the Guardians-Tigers tomorrow at noon with a Topo Chico.
Well,
and not one of the hard seltzer Topo Chicos. I heard those are bad, by the way.
You can't also F over the East Coast when it comes to baseball, too. Like, you got to give them something, right? Yankees-Royals matchup's a 7:08 first pitch there in the East Coast time region.
But Detroit, like, the game starts at 3.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Why can't the game start at 5?
Because then you're up against the Phillies and Mets, who are in New York. God.
How dare we do this?
And
it's
that
the
game
same
does start
time
at 5.
Zone, though. It's the same time zone.
Yeah, but it's New York compared to
Detroit.
Hate all these people.
Wait, Detroit's in the same time zone? They're not in the Mountain time zone? No, they're not with Chicago, huh?
Well, sorry, my bad.
Central.
They're Central.
Central. So, yeah, no, they're an hour behind. So, there. My argument stands. They're a little bit further back in the Central time zone. It makes sense that the city of Detroit is starting before the city of New York.
Jordan, I need you to understand. This inconveniences me and me alone. Therefore, I am mad. And I will not hear anything else of it.
Bro, I understand. It's not like I've...
I don't care who else it adheres or hurts. It only hurts me, so I am mad.
Oh, all right. I'll do my best to try to, I don't know, maybe... Sounds like you need, like, just a full day off, like, and this might be the last day with four games, so I get why you're upset.
I know.
Like,
I have to work the next 7 days in a row, too.
Oh,
That's actually the deeply rooted mad that I am.
So, see, even if, like, people extend these series out and you could get another four-game day, like, not going to happen.
I'm still working all those days.
Damn. Yeah. No, I get it. I'd be upset, too.
Let's crystal ball this. Guardians-Tigers tomorrow. Who you got? Not a gambling, just a baseball. I don't gamble. I am not every other show on this station where we're going to talk about gambling for 4 hours.
Well, I'm a degenerate.
I know you are, but I am not, and my name is first, okay? So we do not talk gambling on this show. So non-gambling, just a baseball gut. Who you got, Guards, Tigers tomorrow?
Tigers. I'm really...
You like the Tigers?
I do. They've literally got young guys hitting at every position, ages like 23 through 27.
I love Riley Green.
I love Kerry Carpenter. I feel like since Avi Baez went on the injured list, they've played a lot better.
Torkelson looked dead to rights, but then came back and has been really solid for them.
I know old man Andy Ibañez all of a sudden getting them a big base hit
big
the other day.
Big pinch hit the other day. Yeah. Big pinch hit.
Like, and when you got guys like that, just, I mean, with, like I said, a young group of kids that are all way ahead of their point, way ahead of their station. I think you said the Royals are, they're what was the phrase that you used? They're ahead of schedule.
They're ahead of schedule.
I would say that the Tigers are, like, slightly behind the Royals. They're maybe a year or two, like, behind, like, what Kansas City is now.
The Tigers were ahead of schedule in August.
Yeah, no kidding. And then they've got a great manager who's been there before.
Yeah, they got a great manager.
I lean on them,
definitely.
Imagine
if Chicago hired A.J. Hinch. Like the tweet said they did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, about that.
So you'll take the Tigers over the Tribe tomorrow. I'll take the Tribe, but that's because I'm biased.
I know.
Can the Mets close out the Phillies tomorrow? Ranger Suarez, Jose Quintana, a 5 o'clock first pitch in Queens.
I say that goes 5 games. And obviously it's a little bit tougher if it goes back to Philly than for New York to win it. But I like New York in that series, but I think it goes 5 games. So
but you like the Phillies to win tomorrow?
Yeah, Phillies get the win tomorrow.
That'll drop us to Yankees-Royals. That's Schmidt against Lugo in Kansas City. That's a 2 o'clock first pitch in Missouri.
I'm going all Kansas City in that one, but I feel like because I'm picking all Kansas City, it's just going to be like opposite day, and then Stanton is going to go off for 2 bombs, and Judge is going to hit a double, and Soto's going to go 3 for 4. So, I mean, they could blow up Seth Lugo, but Kansas City's been playing way better lately, so I'm sticking with who's been playing better lately.
I'm kind of with you. I think this game has Royals all over it, which leads them to a game 4. I don't know if it's going to be on Thursday. Let me double check real quick. Game 4 would be on Thursday, and right now it is scheduled to be Gerrit Cole, Michael Wacha. If the Yankees lose tomorrow, and I'm with you, I'll take the Royals in this game. And for you bettors out there, I will take the Royals on the money line.
Hey.
I don't even know what that means, but it sounds like I
know
what
I'm talking
about.
Means that they're winning straight up.
Cool. I don't know what that means either. I will take the Royals to win this game as well, which would be a fascinating game 4. Gerrit Cole on the road, back up against it. The whole thing is against you, bud. You got to throw. That I want to see. So agreed. For anything else... I want the Royals to win tomorrow because I want to see Gerrit Cole on the mound in a do-or-die matchup. And then the nightcap. We don't have any starters projected yet. Dodgers-Padres, 6 o'clock West Coast time. That's our time as well.
I say the Padres, easy win, unless Ohtani somehow pitches tomorrow. I would not be surprised if the Dodgers all of a sudden pulled a rabbit out of their hat and said, hey, we're going to throw Ohtani for 2 or 3 innings tomorrow. I don't know.
Because desperation?
Just out of... And I bet Ohtani's already coming to Dave Roberts saying, hey, let me try this. Let me see if this is workable. Probably isn't, but... And I do think the San Diego Padres hold all the momentum, but Dodgers got to do something special if they want to win. Otherwise, it's all San Diego.
So you think Padres put them out of their misery tomorrow?
The momentum says so. I mean, I really do think that their bats have just woken up at the right time in the last month and a half or so.
So the Padres win and they take, they get some much needed time off as they had to play every big game down the stretch plus the wild card, and they await the end of Mets Phillies. That's your call, huh?
I love it. I think that, yeah, I think they've earned it, and yeah, they're hitting out of their booties right now.
All right. For the two of you listening out there, Schultzy will take the Tigers, the Phillies, the Royals, and the Pods. I'll take the Guards. I'll take the Mets tomorrow. The Mets close out Philly tomorrow, and that is a wild thing because I think that team is ass, but I think the Mets close out Philly tomorrow. I'll take the Royals, and I'll take the Dodgers in a bounce-back game. Just like for contrarian. That. For contrarian.
Okay.
I'm with you. I think the Padres are the better team, but for S's and G's, as my mama used to say, well, still says she's alive. I'll take the Dodgers for S's and G's.
Max Muncy will hit one, and I'll be proven wrong.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that'll do it for us. We'll catch you next week. More playoff baseball to come. Don't miss out any of it. That's Jordan Schultz. I'm Patrick Harris. Go do something. I would do.